gentlemen, welcome to the Blake and Sal Show with Mark. For over 10 years, dominating the podcast world. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to have some fun. Let's welcome your hosts, Blake, Sal, and Mark.
I hear voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me. Jewels in your religion, all designed to keep you safe. But when rules start getting broken, you start questioning your faith. I have a voice that is my savior, hates to love and loves to hate. I have a voice that has the knowledge.
Welcome to the Blake and Sal Show with Mark, episode 497 in your wonderful hip books. And if you don't have a hip book, that's okay. We won't hold it against you. Hey, I'm Mark, my regular co-host. Blake is in hospital recovering from his colon cancer surgery that went really well. Everyone that gave him, sent him prayers and well wishes, we thank you all from the bottom of our heart. Here's the thing with this ugly disease of cancer. Not only does it affect the individual, but it affects the family, loved ones, and friends. And we're all in the fight together with this, Blake. And if you want to send him words of encouragement, you can do it through the show or our streaming platforms, all the podcast platforms. And also use the hashtag BlakeFightsCancer. Because you know what? Fuck cancer. And all types of cancer. It's a stupid, ugly disease that affects everyone everywhere. And I wish we didn't have it in our lives, but unfortunately it happens. And as far as Sal goes, the biggest heel in podcasting, he's off on some personal business. So I hope his day is going well. And remember, Sal, because of all these wonderful mistakes, we're blaming this show on you, okay? So if it doesn't go right, it's your fault, all right? And by the way, just to let you know, Sting likes me better. So I want to bring on my special guest co-host, our wonderful, wonderful friend from the UK and from Bat Minute and Miami Minutes, Mr. John Parker.
Bye. Hey, thank you so much.
How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing really good. I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me on as a special, I guess, co-host. I hate saying that because it feels like I'm stealing the show.
Well, you're not stealing the show. You are a part of this wonderful show, this program, and we are better for it. And we have basically made some friendships along the way that we do this, and they're solid friendships. And who knows, somewhere down the road, maybe I'll be knocking at your front door and asking you for a glass of wine.
You never know. I always have some because I'm terrible. I always have at least one bottle downstairs waiting for me.
Is it sweet or is it dry red wine?
I like dry. I'm not too into sweet.
That's okay. That means you just put in more maraschino cherries in it to sweeten it.
Well, that might actually be very nice. See? That could be a nice
combination. That or a orange slice.
Oh, okay. Although, listeners, this is a rare occasion where I'm not sitting here recording with wine because I don't know. I was in a rush. I finished work. I had to get here. I had to talk about wrestling. So I was like, no, the wine can wait. And it was a stupid move. The wine should never wait.
That means it'll taste better later on. That's all it's going to be.
Exactly. Think of it that way. Think of it that way. Although I should deny everyone else their wine. I'm replacing Sal as the heel. So you're not allowed any. It's mine.
Okay. There you go. Actually, we should have Sal buy us wine.
Yeah, but that would be like a face turn.
Yeah, but you know, the wine he would give us would not be good wine. It'd be like $2 chuck.
Oh,
that you see at Trader Joe's.
We've got plenty of that here as well.
Well, I think he's got a whole closet full of $2 chuck.
Oh, nothing worse.
It's either that or it's right next to his GameStop stock. I don't know which one. So before we get too deep into our show, just a few housekeeping items, plugs. Hey, get my daughter's wonderful book. I know I am available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at orangehatpublishing.com. It's now in English and Spanish, and it's a good read for parents to read to their children and for grandparents to read to their grandchildren. So it kind of covers the spectrum of the family, so no one is excluded. And also listen to the Dean and Mandy show, available on all wonderful, wonderful podcasting platforms. Probably a popular one that you listen to. They'll be there. Now let's get into the wonderful wide world of professional wrestling sports entertainment.
Yeah. Who wants to do this bit? I can edit this audio out. Me or you? Well, but I mean...
Unfortunately, we have a couple of passings of wonderful wrestlers that have passed on. The first is Ole Anderson, who passed away at the age of 81. Ole Anderson was best known with his brother Gene Anderson as the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. Ben basically was part of the huge NWA outcome that basically... It, I don't say metamorphosized, but became part of Georgia Championship Wrestling, which later became WCW. Basically known for with the Four Horsemen and J.J. Dillon. Ole was kind of like the big muscle behind the scenes and would be heavy speaking and heavy handed and always had something to say against his opponents. Whether it was Ricky Steamboat, whether it was Dusty Rhodes, whether it was tag teams, if you opposed the Four Horsemen and Ole was going to send you a message, it was the one warning shot, and then you better watch your back. Otherwise, you get what you get.
I kind of love it.
Yeah, and he's going to be very, very sorely missed. He was one of those persons that had that wonderful deep voice and could back it up with a good punch. So
I wish I was more familiar with him because because of my age, I'm a little bit younger. So I didn't sort of grow up with him. I kind of got more into him checking out his stuff later on, you know, like in retrospect.
Right.
But I always loved what I did see. I went back and watched a lot of like Four Horsemen and things and stuff like that. And it was always fantastic. Like, I mean, all of them, every version of the Four Horsemen was good, but especially with him.
Oh yeah. And my thing is when they formed, before they had J.G. Dillon, Ole kind of knew the people that he would want in this particular stable of wrestlers. Mm. And with basically at that time, the cream of the crop, Ric Flair, the champion. Then he basically passed the torch on to Arn Anderson. Mm-hmm. Then it was Tully Blanchard. And depending on who you had, it was either him or Barry Windham. Or I believe Sting was in at one time. Then it was Lex Luger. But basically, whatever faction the Four Horsemen was in, Ole was kind of like behind the scenes mouthpiece that if J.G. Dillon wasn't available at that time, Ole was the one that would come out loud and proud and basically taught all the wonderful aspects of the Four Horsemen. And when they said that they're going to come after a wrestler and they're going to basically break you, they did. They came after you and they broke you, literally, with a break your arm, break your leg, break something.
Like that with, especially when, let's say, like wrestlers are presented as heels, because often a heel would be someone like, you know, quite a lot of the time they're cowardly. But I like it when a heel's like, no, I'm going to beat you up. And then they do, because that makes it scarier to me. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. So it's like Ole was the guy that basically, out of the Four Horsemen, you feared the most, because, you know, if you didn't watch your back, or you didn't, you know, watch over your shoulder, you know, you turn around, he's there. Boom. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. One punch down, gone.
Oof.
Another wonderful pro wrestler that passed away suddenly was Virgil, who basically people knew as the bodyguard to Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man in WWF, WWE, passed away at the age of 61. According to the information I got, that's from TMZ, is that the wrestler Virgil, whose real name is Mike Jones, suffered from strokes towards the end, and also suffered from dementia. And it's a shame. 61 is still very young to go through this. But here's the thing that I think most people may or may not realize, that being into life of pro wrestling sports entertainment is not all glitz and glamour that you think it is.
No,
there are other aspects that happen, especially when you either leave the business or you retire from the business. And if you leave you live a hard life during that time that you're working, your health kind of takes a back seat to things, because you have to perform 335 days, 345 days of the year. And you get little time to rest and recuperate, except when you have a scheduled vacation, which is what, for 7-8 days. And then you have to kind of rekindle yourself with your family or loved ones, and still doesn't give you the needed time that you need to recuperate from a lot of things that are affecting your body. And unfortunately, you know, this is what happens, is when you step away and your health kind of catches up to everything. And, you know, it's a shame.
It really caught me off guard as well, because, you know, obviously people have kind of been a bit mean to him over the years, I think, of making fun of him and stuff, you know, because he'll be at like, you know, comic cons and things, and he always makes jokes about, oh, I've got the biggest line. And, you know, he doesn't, but he's just saying it, isn't he? He's just being a character.
Yeah.
But even so, like, even with all this sort of negativity and stuff, I just didn't expect anything like that. As you say, he was still very young, really. 61, that's no age. I knew he wasn't like at the peak of fitness, but he didn't, you know, he never came across as someone unwell, but that's, you know, these things are hidden a lot of the time.
And that's just it, is that, especially when he was in his heyday with working with WWF, WWE, and you could tell that the fans wanted him to break away at DiBiase and basically be a baby face and go against him and challenge him and take the million-dollar belt away from him. And just when it looked like that the people were going to get what they want, pull him back in. He still make him a heel and still the bodyguard for $1 Million Man.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I wanted him as a face because I loved him as a kid.
Yeah. And the vignettes they had with him and Ted DiBiase, they're a hoot. I think the best one that people remember is when Ted DiBiase offers this young boy so much money to dribble the ball 10 times.
Yeah.
And he's on stage, and all of a sudden he gets to 9 and Virgil kicks it. Sorry, kid, you don't get the money. I'm sorry.
I love that one. I only just rewatched that a few weeks ago.
You know? So, I mean, and then Virgil did show up later in WCW with part of the NWO, but he was one of those that was kind of more took a backseat, wasn't in the limelight. He was more the backseat. He was like the B team of the NWO, that if all the main contributors were busy, well, here you go. Here's the B team, and we'll send the B team to beat up whoever. So,
well, if you remember, at the time, they actually did on camera. They started calling it the NWO B team, didn't they? Which was a bit strange because,
well, it's like NWO black and white, NWO red, NWO.
Which, like, you know, okay, what? Sure. As much as I loved him, what was he called in WCW? Vincent, was it? As much as I liked him, I don't think he should have been in the NWO. I liked it more when the NWO was kind of more exclusive. You know, it's like, oh, it's the biggest stars from the other company, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When they start putting in anyone, it's not as effective.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at it, it was like the NWO morphed to like all the heels in WCW, and then all the baby faces were against the NWO, whichever group you want.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a group this week and then you can pick another NWO group next week, you know,
because there's so many.
Yeah, you know, I often wonder if they went by the Freebird rule when it came to like tag teams. Okay, we'll take this person out and then we'll put this one in your place, but we still are going to defend the tag team championships. It's still the NWO. It's still part of the family.
They did do that a few times. They didn't do it like all the time, but I remember quite a few instances where, like someone was injured, so they'd just go, Steiner, you're the tag champ now. Come on.
I think that the moment that sticks out in my mind with NWO is when we had Hollywood Hulk Hogan go against Kevin Nash and was for the title. And basically, Hulk Hogan gives Kevin Nash the poke of doom.
Yeah. It seems funny on paper, but in practice, no.
It was the most foolish and embarrassing moment in professional wrestling. And Kevin Nash talks about it. And unfortunately, it was something that came up to be done by the powers that be, naming Eric Bischoff and Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And it just didn't go over as they thought it would.
I think in theory, it's okay. Because you sit down and you go, that'll get me so much heat, like treating the belt so disrespectfully. But then when you actually see it, it's like, no, this doesn't land. This is a terrible idea.
No. It may have been good on paper, but when you put it past that, no.
No. But, no.
So... we have some title changes in some organizations.
Mm-hmm.
The one that surprised me and shocked the heck out of me is Matt Riddle in New Japan.
Yeah, I was thrilled about this because I haven't really watched WWE regularly for a long time. And I didn't think he was going to go there by any means. So, you know, I watch New Japan. So I was like, wow, oh my God, Matt Riddle. Because I love Matt Riddle.
Matt Riddle. Same goofy kind of guy, different hairstyle, but I think what it is when he gets into the ring and has that mindset, he becomes that type of animal where I'm Matt Riddle, MMA. I basically kick your ass. I'm not even going to think twice about it. And
that's what I love, that he can flip between the two kind of attitudes.
And he had the match against who another than President Ace Tanahashi. And he won the New Japan World Championship at New Japan beginning at Sapporo Night 1. I bet you nobody saw this coming.
No, absolutely not. No. Because you just assume as well, because Tanahashi only just won that, I think, a few weeks ago, if I remember. It's quite a recent change.
Yeah.
And Matt Riddle's a bit of an exception, but someone we're going to be talking about in a minute. You assume people coming from WWE, if they're going to New Japan, I mean, they're not going to give them a title because they're not that kind of wrestler. It's a different style of wrestler. But Matt Riddle, he can straddle the world, can't he? Because he can just do the strong style type thing as well.
Yeah.
So they probably thought, oh, brilliant. Yeah, like stick it on him.
Yeah.
He can bridge the gap between the sort of, you know, worlds, so to speak.
Yeah. And here's the thing with Matt Riddle is this guy can adapt.
Yeah.
You know, if you think that he just plays this goofy type of wrestler, he'll adapt. I mean, he'll do MMA. He'll do Muay Thai. He'll do Roman Reco. He'll do catch. He'll adapt. And that's the thing with him is that I think people forget about the type of background he's got. And when he does do it, it just surprises people. But I was kind of wondering who is going to take the title off of Tanahashi so that way he basically sticks to more responsibilities in behind the scenes part of it. And now we know who it is.
Yeah.
So now the question is Tanahashi going to challenge Riddle down the road to get the belt back? Or is there another contender that's going to step up and take it?
That's interesting. I always prefer it when there's one rematch. And then say if Riddle wins again, that then settles it. Like, oh, okay, it's not a fluke. You know, it's he's the champion. He can then go forward. I always like it when there's at least one rematch.
So my thing is, now that Riddle has entered New Japan, is will this be a way to make sure that Riddle stays and doesn't jump ship? Are they going to kind of, is this like a trial thing to see where it goes or what?
I think it might be the latter. I think it might be a kind of a trial, like see how the Japanese react. And it could also be setting up, in a way, getting him in an AEW match for like Forbidden Door. Because obviously some of the big hitters in New Japan have left and they're going to AEW anyway. So it's not really Forbidden Door. They need some people to send. And although he's not Japanese, that doesn't matter. You know, they sent Will Ospreay. He wasn't Japanese.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got Tama Tonga that has left, and you've got Okada that has rumored and big rumor that he's going to sign with AEW. So, I mean, yeah, the Forbidden Door is going to be open. And the only thing that I could see Riddle going down the road for is if Orange Cassidy still has the belt, is Orange Cassidy's belt.
Oh, that would be good, actually. Yeah.
New Japan. I mean,
well, because that belt, the original idea of that title seemed to be that it would travel around a lot. You know, because initially it was getting defended, you know, all over the place in like different promotions and things. And Cassidy did defend it in another promotion, like here in the UK recently.
Right.
But it's not happening a lot, is it? So it would be kind of cool if someone took it away for a while.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be a great matchup. Matt Riddle, Orange Cassidy. Yeah.
I'm into that.
Hey, matchmakers, let's put it in the play. Let's make a deal. Come on.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Let's do it. Come on. What are you doing, Tony Khan? And
Tony, come on.
Tanahashi.
Oh, Tanahashi, set something up, man. Come on. Work your magic. You know, do I have to tell you how to do your job, TK? I guess. I don't know.
Come to us. We're better.
So then another unexpected title change. And for the love of me, I thought David Finlay basically was going to be the person that I would never expect anyone to knock off. But newcomer Nick Nesmith, David Finlay to win the IWGP Global Championship at New Japan World New Beginning at Sapporo Night 1. Nick, basically, you saw in TNA, now is going to be in New Japan?
Yeah. That caught me by surprise as well. I thought for him, especially because a couple of years ago he said he wanted to kind of do less work. So I thought, oh well, TNA, he'll just do TNA. That's fine. That's right. Great. But no, he's gone all the way to Japan.
Wow.
And like, I'm not a big fan of David Finlay. I don't hate him or anything. I like him. I'm not a big fan though. But I didn't see this is another one. I didn't see this happening. No. To give the title, because this is what I was meaning before. Nick Nemeth, love him, but he's a WWE style wrestler, right? Which you don't get a lot of in Japan. It doesn't always translate that kind of, you know, of wrestling. But they obviously see something in him to be like, you know, have a run with it. Let's see what happens.
You got to look at it. Finlay adjusted, and Finlay, you know, kind of adapted strong style. Here's the thing, Mr. Nemeth. You know, welcome to Japan. They strike harder, they kick harder, they throw harder, they flip harder, they come at you harder. And if you're not ready for it, get ready.
Yeah. Everything is harder.
I mean, if you look at some of the chops they do and the welts they leave on that person's chest, oh my God, the blood vessels break right away. And if you keep chopping, and they showed pictures, your whole chest looks like, as they put it, red meat.
It does, doesn't it?
You know, and if you're not prepared for that, Mr. Nemeth, then you better get in the training dojo and get prepared and put a lot of liniment on your chest, because you're going to need that, my friend.
I'm very torn on that when people do it, right? Because on one hand, I get it's Japanese sort of wrestling culture. It's their style.
Yeah.
And they like it. It's sort of like a Bushido, like a way of the warrior kind of a thing. But I also sort of am on Bret Hart's side when if you've heard him talk about it, where he says, like, well, why do they do that? It's stupid. You're not actually trying to hurt each other. You're supposed to be pretending to hurt each other. So I kind of agree with Bret. It's like, oh, wow, okay, that is actually damaging someone. Ah.
Yeah, I mean, not there's bad blood between some people. At times there is. But I think what it is when you have a newcomer, okay, let's welcome him.
Yes.
Let's show him what we're all about. And then he'll get the message that if he tries to basically, you know, kind of like overstep his bounds, well, I guess we'll have to put him in his place.
You know, they do that quite a bit in Japan as well. Like, yeah, they do it with the young boys, don't they? Like, they put them through the paces.
Oh, yes, definitely, without a doubt. And that's how the young boys kind of become like, okay, we have to get into this mindset. We have to get into this great physical shape. We have to be able to take the hits, take the blows, and get back up again and act like it doesn't hurt, even though we're going, oh my God.
Which is why it's interesting to see Nick Nemeth at this stage of his career go there. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, I mean, I want to see him versus Tanahashi. That'd be quite cool.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt.
I think they'd mix quite well. Whereas if he went up against some like really hard hitting, strong style guy, that might not blend so well. I don't know.
Well, him against Ishii. There you go. There we go.
Oh, okay. You've changed my mind already. That would be good. That's not one I ever expected.
I just want to see how long Mr. Nemeth is going to last.
honest, I think pretty much any match you throw him in is going to be good. You know, he's a good wrestler. He was always underappreciated, I think, over the years. I know he's had titles, but he's had more talent than that.
Yeah, I think towards the end, he was like underutilized. I mean, when he was with the Dirty Dogs with Robert Roode, and then Robert Roode's on the shelf, and he tried to kind of jumpstart him in his singles career, it didn't kind of go over really well. And I think he was just underutilized, and that's why they kind of let him go. And from what I'm hearing, when Vince made the decision to let him go, it was more of, well, you know, he's getting to that point where he's in like his mid-40s, and, you know, it's kind of hard to do, you know, going like 20 and 30 minutes. And I'm just going, you know, you're going to regret letting some of this talent go, because they're going to come back and bite you in the butt. And
absolutely. Yeah.
Mr. Nem is that type of person where he'll recreate himself and get the attention. And it happened in TNA, and now it's going to happen in New Japan. And who knows, down the road, maybe Triple H will be on the phone going, "Hello, Nick. Hey, you know, do you want to come? You know, can you help us out, buddy?"
I could see that happening. I could absolutely see that happening.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine.
And especially because now that Triple H seems to have more power,
yeah,
he does seem to be doing stuff like that. Like, in fact, this, as of recording, quite a recent development was the Sean Spears thing.
Yes.
He's gone back. And I didn't think he'd ever go back.
No, I didn't think so either. I kind of thought that maybe, you know, people in WWE would look at him going to AEW as being like damaged goods. Like, well, yeah, you know, Tony Khan's got him and Tony Khan's doing this with him. And do we ever want him back, that now that Tony's kind of had him? And well,
exactly. Yeah. And they let him use his AEW name and persona, which is a big step. Because if you've noticed, everyone that they have brought in like that, they've allowed them to keep their presentation. Like, you know, Cody, Jade, people like that, which I think that's a big move, because in the past they would have just completely changed the character.
Yeah.
Now they're okay, no, trust us with you, trust us. And they're proving that the trust is there, you know.
I think why they're doing it that way is more so for the fans, because if you're used to having a wrestler and war organization, and we'll give an example like Jade Cargill. Okay, and now she leaves AEW, comes to WWE. She's still Jade Cargill. And basically, the fans that she had in AEW will follow into WWE, which will give WWE a broader fan base.
Definitely.
And probably sell more merchandise.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Although I don't watch much WWE, I'm going to praise them. It's a good move. It's smarter for everybody. Because if they kept doing stuff like that, I would be like, oh, okay, maybe I'll check out what they're doing at the moment, you know?
Because here's the feather in the cap of WWE is when Cody came back, was with AEW, came up with the name The American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, walked in the gimmick like he's usually doing now in WWE, comes out with his weight belt, throws the weight belt into the audience, and in AEW, the audience threw the weight belt back.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Now, in WWE, he basically takes a weight belt, autographs it, kisses it, and gives it to a kid, and the kid is all excited.
Yeah, so, I love seeing that, to be honest. I do, because I like Cody, and I always remember as a kid, I wanted Bret Hart to give me the glasses, you know.
The glasses, yeah. Natalia's kind of doing, kind of following that. But, I mean, so that's something that they're doing. They're realizing that if you want one wrestler in an organization to come to yours, probably let that wrestler keep the name for continuity's sake. Because why confuse people when you know, hey, this guy was in the AEW, now he's in WWE. You know, you're not going to try to lie to people. You're basically going to have people going, look, we got this guy in our organization. Come see what he can do for us. Look at all the stuff we can sell you. Look at this. Buy this.
Makes perfect sense. Sadly, doesn't work the other way, because I'd really like to see Dolph Ziggler in Japan rather than Nick Nemeth. But there you go.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When you're in New Japan and you have a name like Dolph Ziggler, you're looking at, well, maybe this guy should be like part of the Chippendales review or something.
Yeah.
With a theme like that. But when you come up with Nick Nemeth, it's kind of like, well, okay, we're on the independent circuit. We know what you can do. So show us what you can do. So, I mean, but yeah, Dolph Ziggler, I swear to God, I think they got that name from a Chippendales dancer.
It 1,000% sounds like a stripper name, doesn't it?
Yeah, or some porno stage name. So now the change is, everyone remembers Mustafa Ali in WWE. Hey. Well, Mustafa Ali has gone to TNA, and he beat Chris Sabin to win the TNA X Division Championship at TNA No Surrender. Kudos!
Yeah, that's great.
Mr. Ali.
Because I love him, but I actually didn't want him to go to AEW because, and I mean this in a positive way, because I think AEW have too many guys like that already. So he'd just be another one. You know what I mean? And he doesn't deserve that. He deserves something like this. He deserves to be, you know, really moving up the card and doing well and winning titles and things. So TNA was the perfect choice for him at the moment.
Because I think, like you said, A&W, he would get lost in the shuffle. He would get underutilized. And when he went to NXT for a little bit and basically got a jump start and everything, and he was showing everyone what can do and then some, I also think he was showing the younger wrestlers in NXT, like, okay, this is what you should do. This is how you should do it. This is how you should present it. This is the package you should present it in.
Yes.
So I think he was basically showing these younger wrestlers, this is what you need to do to basically make this work. And it shows, because you see a lot of the younger wrestlers on his team come in with not only great acrobatic skills and being in great shape and great cardio, but the promos are better, their packages are better. They basically put the whole thing out better. This seems like they're more self-aware and have self-confidence in their character and how they want to present it to make it to where you're going to either get that big pop or you're going to get a lot of boos, one of the two. And if you get nothing, then you know you're in trouble.
Well, I think he surprised me over the last couple of years. I didn't realize in the past how effective he is at storytelling and at character work. Because when you see him, you're like, oh, is he just like a flippy guy? No, he's actually got a lot of charisma and personality, and he can do promos and everything. He's got all the goods.
Yeah, so kudos to TNA. They're getting a great guy, and let's see where this is going to take them. Hopefully, he's going to take them to better and bigger things. You know, the biggest thing that would be Moose, and if he gets a shot at Moose, God bless him.
Oh, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Those two against each other. I'm trying to picture that match in my mind. How would they fight?
You kind of look at it like a David the Goliath match, but here's the thing. You know, he don't need a slingshot. He's got everything else in his arsenal that Moose can't do or won't do, may not do, because Moose is relying on his, you know, big brawn and big body, and, you know, I'm Moose, big and bad, and look at me. Well, you know, sometimes it doesn't always get you the paycheck into the pay window.
No, exactly. I could see Mustafa Ali beating him. That'd be quite cool, actually. That's now my wish list.
I mean, yeah, you can think of that, and you can have Saban challenge him for the big title. Alex Shelley challenge him. You know, all the people that, you know, made TNA something, like Alex Shelley and Chris Saban and other thing, people like that, where, you know, people kind of look at him like, I don't know where that. I mean, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, do your homework, Google the Motor City Machine Guns, watch their matches, and I'm telling you, these guys, workhorses personified.
Absolutely.
If you want to talk about excitement, if you want to talk about electricity, if you want to talk about action, Motor City Machine Guns, Google it, watch your matches. I guarantee that if you blink, you're going to miss something. I swear to God.
Yeah, they back in the, you know, earlier days of TNA, they were probably my team. They were the one I liked the most.
Oh, yeah. And now we come to Sal, I hate to say this. I know. I think Sal's going to be wearing a black armband when we go through this. Coming up, AEW Revolution, Sunday, March 3rd, where it's going to be headlined by an Icons last match. We'll get into that, but let's look at the card from top to bottom. Da-da-da-da-da.
Woo!
Okay, I don't know if Tony had a hand in this, but Meat Madness match?
I couldn't believe it when I saw that graphic. I was like, wait, what are you doing? What? This is brilliant. This is fantastic.
What the hell are you thinking? Meet Amanda Smith. Are you trying to basically kind of jump on like the March Madness thing and trying to expand on that? Is that it?
I think that's what they're doing. Yeah.
A play on words instead of March Madness, Meet Madness match. Okay. All right. Well, let's go for it. The participants in this wonderful match are Wardlow, the master of the powerbomb, and his symphony of powerbombs, versus Powerhouse Hobbs, master of the choke slam and body slam, versus the Murderhawk monster, Lance Archer. A plethora of mean, ugly nastiness.
What's big meaty man slapping meat?
Here you go.
That's what it's going to be. There. You know what you're getting.
That's it. So out of this wonderful triangle of all these players, who do you see winning?
Right. To me, there's only one person who realistically should win. I'm sad to say it because I like them all. They're all great. It's a bit weird that they're all heels, though. I don't really understand why three heels, but okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But really, you've got to give it to Wardlow, surely, because he's in a storyline. He's in a faction who, I like the faction, but ever since MJF's gone, they've had nothing to do. So get some wins. Win something. Come on. Because Lance Archer, right, I adore him. I love him. If he wins, what's going to come from it?
Well, besides Jake coming out, who knows?
Because wasn't he joining a faction? Jake and him with the Righteous?
Supposedly when they had Vincent and yeah, they looked like they were going to be, but then all of a sudden they stopped it.
Yeah.
So now you got Powerhouse Hobbs, who's with the Don Callis family. So, I mean, it's not inconceivable to say that possibly the two factions, the Kingdom and Don Callis family, having a feud?
You could, but they're both heels again. That'd be a bit strange. I don't know.
Yeah,
unless you turn one of them, but that also doesn't seem right at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing is with Adam Cole, baby, leading this group and Don Callis leading the other group.
Yeah.
You know, you would like someone to kick Don Callis's ass besides Chris Jericho. I could see
Wardlow maybe turning face and leaving the group, but it still seems too soon. But I could imagine it maybe happening, but not. Don't turn Powerhouse Hobbs. He's always better as a heel.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, and unless they recruit Wardlow to join the Don Callis family,
you could do. But then the people who complain about AEW, you know, jumping around the storyline, they'd complain about that.
Well, and this is unheard of, where you've got three heels into a match and going against each other, and we're proving a point of what, who's the strongest, who's the baddest, who's the meanest? If that's where you're going for.
But at the same time, I agree with you totally, but at the same time, I like the idea of these three having a match. I have no problem with it. It makes me think of, you know, the undercard on New Japan events, because they just throw things together, and that's fine. Yeah, I always have a good time with those matches, you know.
So I mean, here we go. You say Wardlow, I have to agree with you. I mean, if you want to go into a storyline and this would be the way to do it, to expand the storyline and break out Wardlow to basically either pin Lance Archer or Powerhouse Hobbs. I'm just hoping that none of the rest of the factions get involved in this, and it becomes an all brawl where it's everyone gets disqualified.
I especially don't want that if this card is 100% accurate and that's the opening match. I hate it when the opening match doesn't have a conclusion.
Yeah,
save that for the middle.
I mean, you wanna open this wonderful triangle of if you want to say, man meat, and to basically get your attention, get you excited, and get the blood pumping for the match that's going to follow.
Which is why matches like this are really good to start off a card. You know, ones that don't necessarily have a lot of story going. Because it's just it's almost like the opening band when you go see a show. You know, they're just getting your blood pumping, as you say.
Well, you know, or you go to a show and you have a comedian that's opening for the main act. You want to make sure that the opening comedian doesn't bomb. Because if it does, then you're kind of wondering, well, if the opening comedian bombs, what's the main guy gonna do?
Yeah, you it know, brings the atmosphere down, doesn't it?
Yeah, how do you recover from that? Now you got some main comedian that's got to come up and basically heckle the opening act that wasn't good. So I mean, this is gonna be good.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a slugfest. It's gonna be a slapfest. And yeah, Wardlow's gotta prove himself with this one.
I think so. I think it's important to give him a good outing. Yeah, especially because lately he hasn't had too much to do.
Besides pushing Adam Cole in the wheelchair. You know?
Yeah.
So now the next match we have is FTR versus Blackpool Combat Club with John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli. I don't know. I think you can flip a coin and go either way on this one. You know, my heart goes to FTR, but I think Blackpool Combat Club, I think, has to win this one in order to prove a point.
Yeah, you might be onto something, because I was the same. I was very torn on it, on how to decide. Initially, I was leaning towards FTR. Like, oh, yeah, they might give you a feel-good win there. But I don't know. I think you might have hit the nail on the head. I think to prove a point, because that's kind of their whole thing, isn't it? And they might do it in, they might be a bit untoward, they might cheat. Well, not cheat, but they might be a bit extreme behind the referee's back, let's say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you got to prove the point that basically you're here to kick ass and take names, and whether you collect titles or not is, you know, no difference to you. You just want to basically beat up people, and this is what you do. Then FTR would be the stepping stone to do that, because FTR is known for rough and tumble tag team wrestling. And if this is where you want to go, then you got to beat FTR in order to get that next step.
That I think that could be what they're going for. Maybe to establish Moxley and Castagnoli as a team, because we know they're in the same faction, but they don't often tag together. So maybe this is to like solidify it in your mind. Like, oh, no, now they are a tag team.
Because at one point, I know that they want to go after the Trios titles with Bryan Danielson.
Well, what's weird about that is still Danielson doesn't interact with the others very much.
No. If you want to have contenders for a tag team championship, this would be the two people to do it, to put belts on.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of basically reward them for beating up and kicking ass and going, okay, you know, we beat this team, we beat that team, so, you know, the only thing for us to do is basically win the belts and basically trample on people and move on. So, I mean, if this is what they're looking to do, then they got to beat FTR.
I think so. And it would make a big statement. Because if you beat someone like that, it's like, whoa.
Definitely. Okay. Definitely. The next match was going to be, we've talked about it, Will Ospreay. It's easy for you to say. I say, because this is going to be Will Ospreay's breakout moment with AEW, I say he's going to win hands down.
Absolutely.
And I think when you're coming into an organization from New Japan into AEW, and they're putting a lot of media press behind you and money behind you, and you want to make a good impression, this is the way to do it, is to beat someone from the Don Callis family and to make a statement, make a point that, okay, I'm here. I'm here for one thing, one thing only. I want to win the championship belt. I want to be the number one guy. Mm-hmm. And for me to do this, I have to knock this guy off.
Absolutely. You're totally right. I agree. Will Ospreay, for all the reasons you've just listed, he's the big thing. He's regarded possibly as the best wrestler in the world right now. So to start him off day one, because I know he's wrestled there before, but not as part of the roster. So that's separate. Right. Let's forget that. So this is his day one, really, because he's not going to have a match before this, is he? So, you know, you don't give him a loss. The only way I could see him losing, the only way they might spin it is because he's affiliated with the family, Don Callis' family. And so is Takeshita, obviously. So right. Maybe he's about to win and Don Callis gets annoyed and they jump him or something, but that wouldn't be satisfying to me. I think it would kill his heat a little bit, you know.
So I mean, this is another from the mind of Tony Khan. This is something where you get two people from the same faction battling each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now my thing is, we all know that Will Ospreay's got other intentions involved. That basically, I don't think he's going to be the yes person for Don Callis. Will Ospreay has never been that type of person where basically he's his own man and basically you're not going to tell him anything differently.
Yeah.
So if this is a way to prove himself, not only to Don Callis, but to others, then he's got to win this match. If not, then it's going to look bad. He's going to look like he's ill-prepared and he can't take on the big challenges and he chokes when the big time comes.
Exactly.
You know, so down the road, I see Will Ospreay leaving the Don Callis family and striking out on his own, or he takes Kyle Fletcher with him.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. He takes him with him, you know, because he had his own faction already. Just keep that going. I could see him leaving the Don Callis family on this night, because you could turn him face. They know the fans are going to cheer for him.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
going to get a big pop. So yeah. Turn him face in the match. Do what I said, right? He's going to win. Don Callis jumps him, but he sees it coming. He counters it. He beats up Don Callis. Then he finishes off Takeshita. Takeshita can take the loss. It's fine. It won't affect him, really.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to rankings, I don't know where he stands, Takeshita, but here's the thing. You know, from what I understand, I think Kyle Fletcher has got his visa problems worked out. I think everything is all corrected.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. I would say that Kyle Fletcher, he's going to be the question mark, the enigma that basically, will he make an appearance or won't he? And if he does, I can see him eating Will Ospreay. I can see him and Will having their faction back together, and they're only missing the third piece of the triangle for their faction. And it's just going to be a matter of time before he recovers from his injury. And then you got the faction back. And I think that's what everyone is waiting for. And I think that's what they want to do. And I think they look at it, if it worked in New Japan, it can work in AEW.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously, you know, AEW being founded by wrestlers from New Japan, they get it. They understand. Like, some people criticize AEW, oh, there's too many factions. I like it because it's a Japanese style of doing things. In Japan, you've got to be in a faction. Like, everyone's in a faction.
And the thing is the popularity of everything in New Japan, I think Tony Khan wants some of that to trickle down into his organization. And the way he's doing it is by this way. And the fans in New Japan are also going to follow his product because you have wrestlers going back and forth. And if the fans are going to stick behind the wrestler, they'll gravitate to your organization. They'll watch your programming just to see what their favorite wrestler is going to be able to do on any given night. And case in point, Will Ospreay. And I'm telling you right now, Will Ospreay is not going to disappoint.
No, absolutely.
And I don't think Will Ospreay is the type of person that would want to come in, especially on a pay-per-view, on a debut, and lose.
Yeah, no, you're right. As much as I like a surprise, I can't foresee any Ospreay loss in a positive light.
No.
So just Tony Khan, do up the people want this time. Okay.
Tony Khan, Tony, do the right thing.
Do it. Do it. Do Plus, it. You know, Will Ospreay, he's English, so, yeah. You know, I like that.
Yeah. Then the match that we have coming after that is Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson, as Bryan calls Eddie the King of the Bums. But yet, you got a bum that has three titles. Explain that, Bryan. That doesn't happen by accident, my friend.
No, no. Although I'm still a bit confused by this title. The continental crap. Like, why wasn't... I think people have said this before. Shouldn't the international championship have been the AEW part of that? Wouldn't that make more sense than making a new one? But
you're preaching to where I asked the same thought I had. Or my thing is, why couldn't you make it a trophy? A trophy that basically, when you have the tournament again next year, you take the name plaque off and you put another name plaque on it. Make it a trophy. You know,
I like it when they do that, like with the Owen Hart.
I mean, look in New Japan. Yeah. I mean, trophies and the wonderful celebration they have with it. I mean, you could do the same thing. And Eddie Kingston's been in New Japan. Eddie has mentors in New Japan that basically have fought him. So, I mean, why not, instead of making a title, make it a trophy? But, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's strange. I like it in a way. My idea was just, don't make a new one. Put the international, hence the name, international. That's the point.
So maybe down the road that Tony may be looking to morph the two belts.
That would be good, yeah.
You know, and just make it the one title.
See, that would be cool. I would like that. Because I, as a big nerd, I play a lot of like wrestling video games.
Right.
And ones where you're like you're in charge, you're the booker, you know, like really statistics and things like that. And I always set up my company to be like, okay, each belt, I don't mind having lots of belts, but I like them to have a purpose, a gimmick. Because why, in theory, if this was all totally legit sport, right? Why would you choose to go after that and not one of the others? I always like it when there's an explanation for, okay, well, I want to go after this because this belt's for the best technical wrestler or whatever, you know.
Right.
And I think they're trying to foster that kind of thing with this, where this is a tough, strong style kind of belt. So I like that idea.
Right.
And then this match proves it. Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson, they're going to beat the crap out of each other.
Oh, without a doubt. And I don't know the animosity between the two, whether it's generated or whether it's real. I think sometimes it's bleeding over because I don't think to give Eddie Kingston enough credit for what he's done or accomplished or how he's done it. I think they look at him as basically a total enigma, that he's kind of like comes in, tries to kick butt, tries, you know, he's got his one finishing move. But I think Eddie's going to surprise you because I think with this match, he may pull up a submission move to try to have Bryan tap out.
Oh, that would be cool. Because I was actually going to say, I think Kingston wins. Because he's quite new to being the champion. We know Bryan Danielson's like, he said publicly, I don't really care if we have belts or not, it doesn't matter. And it's that stipulation, if Danielson loses, he has to shake Kingston's hand.
Right.
I think that's where it's leading. It's almost like a, you know, he's doing his retirement tour almost, isn't he? So he's like, well, I'll put you over, I'll shake your hand on TV, you're great.
Right. Now here's the thing. And you brought it up. Yeah. Bryan Danielson has said that this is kind of going to be his final year and he's going to be working less and he wants to spend more time with his family. It wouldn't make sense to put not only one title on, but three titles on him if that's the case, because I'm not sure if all titles are going to be defended in it.
Eddie that's something else I don't understand yet. Is this the one or the three?
That's just it. Eddie says yes. But Tony is the one that says, we'll see. But I know we're going to put one title online for sure.
Yeah.
I don't see a title change. And will Brian shake his hand? I don't know. I think you what you're going to have to do is you're going to have Claudio. You're going to have John basically physically hold his hand out and make some sort of contact. And then everyone walks away, supposedly. But then what happens is the whole Blackpool Combat Club jumps on Eddie.
And then
you have the rest of the locker room spilling out to go up against the all force of the the Blackpool Combat Club. But here's the thing. Where is Wheeler Yuta?
That's true. We haven't seen him for a while. Has he been, he's been injured, hasn't he, I think?
I think so. I'm not sure what extent, but here's the thing. You know, they're always kind of like bad-mouthing Wheeler Yuta.
Yeah.
Does Wheeler stick with the Blackpool Combat Club, or is he going to find an ally in Eddie Kingston?
Oh, that'd be cool. I mean, we're expanding to have even more factions here, but I like that idea of Kingston having a faction too to fight the Combat Club.
Or basically like someone like a mentor.
Yeah.
Or Wheeler Yuta.
Because we thought that's what Danielson was going to be, but he barely speaks to him.
No, it's like, you know, you don't see a lot of interaction because I supposedly Brian says, I'm going to be the one that's going to show him how to do strong style. I'm going to be the one to show him how to do submission. I'm going to be the one to show him this. And okay, well, Brian, show me.
Yeah. Show us, Brian. What are you doing? Come on.
So, for the AEW International Championship, we have the champion Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong with Matt Taven and Mike Bennett and the rest of the wonderful Undisputed Kingdom. So here's the thing. Is the Puppet Master going to work his magic? Is Adam Cole going to work something where basically Orange Cassidy goes down, or is something else going to happen?
I think title change. I think this is what, because Cassidy's had, he had that one amazing run with the belt. This one's not been as good, but it's still had some quality matches. But I think now is the time as well to make the Undisputed Kingdom, make them a threat again. They haven't been a threat since the MJF thing.
1 second, Johnny. I look at this particular match is Orange Cassidy's been on a roll. And somehow he's found a friend in Jake Hager recently.
That's true. That was a surprise.
So I can see Jake Hager kind of coming in and trying to even the side. But I don't think it's time yet to put a belt on Roderick Strong.
Okay.
I mean,
this is our first disagreement of the night. How dare you?
I mean, it would be the first belt within the faction, and is it going to be Roderick's belt, or is it going to be the group belt? And basically, would Adam Cole like wear the belt over his shoulder,
a
la Christian Cage, like he did with Killswitch?
Yeah, I don't know. He could do that, and it would be fun. But as you've just pointed out, we've already had it quite recently.
So, I mean,
do you do it again? I don't know.
He says, here's the thing. If I expected anyone to get a belt in that faction, I would expect Wardlow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because he's the person that right now has made an impact, and I think he would go well in the rankings, and I think he would basically be in that contendership spot. Roderick Strong,
I get what you're saying, and you could maybe put maybe Roderick loses and you put Wardlow in a match with Orange Cassidy as like revenge, you know.
Yeah,
but I just like the idea that now's the time to remind people that Roderick Strong isn't just the guy shouting Ada! As great as that is, there's more to him than that. We know he can go, and he hasn't had too many opportunities to do that in AEW yet.
I think if you want to prove a point with Roderick Strong, you would do it without Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. To say, hey, look, this is what I can do. I don't need any help. I can basically knock out Orange Cassidy myself. Also, this would be the way storyline wise to basically say, okay, now Orange Cassidy has a time to heal up all his injuries and then come back and then challenge Roderick Strong at a later date for the belt.
Which would be good. Because remember, last time he lost it, wasn't it to heal up? And then plans had to change
Yeah. So
quite quickly.
it is a possibility that Roderick may win. So you have convinced me, sir, to change my decision to
Hey,
Roderick
okay.
Strong.
But at the same time, don't feel like you have to change your decision. We
No,
are allowed to have different
I
ideas.
look at it in the full aspect that, okay, Orange Cassidy, he wins, okay, and what?
That's the thing. We
What else does
he's
he do?
defended it a million times already, you know?
Yeah, what else can he do? What else do you want him to do? If you want him to basically be remembered for a match, okay, here's something. Put him against Okada.
Oh, whoa. Yeah, yes. Because too many
If you
people
it's
still like sleep on Orange Cassidy. They don't see how good he is.
Right. I mean, if you want to basically have Orange Cassidy need something with the belt, you got to put him against a heavy hitter. Okada would be the person. And if he loses the title to Okada, then there's no bad feelings, no ill will saying, okay, Orange Cassidy, you tried it, you did your best, but on this particular day, Okada just beat you with a little bit more.
That would be good. And you know what? Okada is someone who would elevate the belt. Like if he
Correct.
wins the title, you're like, oh, whoa, okay, it's a real deal kind of title.
Because then I could see him challenging Ishii and other people with the forbidden door being opened and possibly challenge Mr. Ospreay.
Oh, yeah. This is brilliant. And that's what it could mean by international if they're not going to take it abroad.
Or walk in Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh, don't that would be my heaven if he joined as well. Oh, God.
But I mean, I think you gotta do something when Okada comes in. You've gotta make him go for a major title to basically get him noticed, get him to that point where a title is going to mean something around his waist. And he's going to defend it. And he's going to defend it against the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Orange Cassidy. He's been doing a great job. But I think the steam is running out.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
the popularity that he used to have, especially when you play the music and the Best Friends theme comes in and everyone is kind of, putting hands. Trent in storyline is kind of questioning whether or not he wants to stay in Best Friends.
Yeah.
Chuck Taylor is injured. Rocky Romero is kind of hit and miss. He does his own kind of thing. So the only thing left is makes sense is for to take the belt off Orange Cassidy and let Best Friends kind of repair their friendship or see if they splinter off.
Yeah, I mean, they could splinter off. You could technically completely. I have heard no rumors, people. This is just off the top of my head. You could have Okada found his faction, you know, Chaos. What if he makes like Chaos USA or something? And you could, Rocky Romero can be in that. Or, you know, he could pick Orange Cassidy instead of the Best Friends and it'd be controversial, you know.
Yeah. Anything is possible. And here's the thing. With Okada coming in, everything and anything is possible. And I, wow. When he makes his appearance and he is all elite, you're gonna see shit happen. And I think people are either gonna be stepped up, they're gonna step up or be stepped on.
Yep, absolutely.
Because here's the thing. Okada's going to have a target on his back, and I want to see who the first opponent is going to be that wants to basically kick his butt. I've got my idea. I don't think that it probably will happen.
Okay.
But,
okay.
I mean, my thing is when MGF comes back is to have MGF versus Okada.
Oh, yeah. You've got, I think they have to do that quite soon. That would be amazing. Everyone will love it. That's going to bridge the two worlds again. You're bringing in, you know, the Japanese style. Yep. MJF's a bit more of, you know, the Western style.
Yep.
They'll flow together well, though. It won't be like a mismatch.
Yep. And if you want to have MJF, you know, climb the ladder again, that's the way you do it.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm into that. Oh, I love your idea.
Now we got the TNT Championship. God, this is still a championship. It's the forgotten championship.
Because basically,
you have a TNT championship for TNT television. Then you have the TBS championship for TBS television. One is female, one is male. Why he was created, I have no idea. I think it was just for the sake of the wonderful television networks. I have to say, hey, we got champion.
Well,
but what I would do,
much like I said before with my video games, right? Slightly rebrand it. I would take that title and be like, okay, keep the name, that's fine. And because of the name, it's basically a TV title, right? So I would put a short time limit on the matches.
Yep.
Like I'd say maybe the matches are 10 minutes.
Yep.
And you have to defend it every week.
There you go.
That's the gimmick. That's what I would do. And it'll be the hot potato title. There'll be short reigns.
You know, John, that is old school thinking, and it works because that's what they used to do old school during territories.
Exactly.
You have a TV championship. You defend it week after week. You're on 10 minutes. You're on 20 minutes. You defend it. And basically what they do is they figure out a contender for you. They throw them in.
Yeah.
You win 1 week. You come back next week. And, you know, I love that. I love that thinking. Tony.
Come on, man, do it.
And you have your ears on. Here you go, buddy.
And it would give it a purpose, right? Because again, in the world of AEW, right? If you're a wrestler, why are you picking to fight for the TNT championship over the international? What's making you go for it? If you want to prove I can fight week after week, that would be the title to go for, right? That would be the good gimmick.
There you go. So we've got the wonderful champion, Christian Cage, who is head of the patriarchy. God knows. I don't know who came up with the name. And frankly, this had to come from the mind of Christian Cage.
I think it did. I absolutely think it did. And it's like a blend of two things, isn't it? It's because A, he always talks about fathers. And B, you've got all the patriarchy jokes in the Barbie movie. So I think he just went, hang on, what if we mix those two?
So then he's going to be with the Progeny Wayne in Killswitch and Mother Wayne against the wannabe Chippendale dancer, Daniel Garcia.
Woo. Yep.
So here's my look on this. Daniel Garcia has gotten backup from Danny Magic and some other wrestlers. Do I see a title change coming? I would like to say yes, but if it does happen, I think I would like Killswitch to break away and to get the championship.
Yeah.
I don't see it putting on Daniel Garcia. Not now, not at this time, only because who else does Dan Garcia got when you got this big faction here that you're up against?
That's it.
You know, if you do beat Christian Cage and you got him down on the ground, you know, are the rest of this wonderful brood going to come in and kick your ass? I know Mother Wayne's got this wonderful arm that goes right between his legs. You know, and it just,
she's really embraced it. I've loved seeing how she's joined in with all this.
She has morphed into this mother, I'll be damned, and you know, I'm gonna basically do my damnedest to make our team win. And
yeah,
if I have to put one between your legs, so be it.
It's fantastic.
And you notice she smiles about it too.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like she wasn't involved in wrestling before, was she? But she, it seems like she has been.
No, she was, I think, more involved with her son and her husband as far as, you know, kind of giving him moral support and encouragement. But I think now she's taken that to another level, because if you notice, Nick has been silent.
Yeah.
Nick is basically doing what Christian tells him to. Now, here's the thing. Will Nick do the same thing if Mother says, Nick, do this because Christian told me to, and I'm telling you to do it? You know, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, Christian's large and in charge, but, you know, sometimes when mommy says something, it gets done.
And I could see that being sort of like a bit of Nick Wayne's character of like, yeah, he listens to his mother.
Yeah, you know, it's like, now I'm in a conflict. Do I listen to, you know, my artificial dad, or do you listen to my real mom?
Although, while I agree and I love that, I still don't think it'll affect the outcome of the match personally. I'm going with Christian Cage, because it just seems weird to throw the belt on Daniel Garcia from out of nowhere. You know,
I see Daniel having more of a trios belt than a single belt right now, or part of a tag team than put a singles belt on.
Well, also because, like, technically, Christian's still got his thing going with Adam Copeland. Like, I know they're not interacting much, but it's because Adam Copeland's doing his open challenge thing. But that's all to build up the wins to get back at Christian, isn't it?
Correct. So my thing is, to put a belt on Daniel Garcia would kind of negate, you know, Adam Copeland's storyline.
Unless Copeland comes out and costs him it, maybe? And then they can keep their feud going, or, and Daniel Garcia can take the belt away from the feud.
Or Adam Copeland comes in to help Daniel Garcia so he doesn't get his butt kicked after he loses the match.
Yeah.
And now that kind of sets up some tag team match down this road where you have Christian and you pick any other one of your wonderful, you know, brood members. It could be Killswitch. It could be Nick Wayne.
I think it should be Nick Wayne, because then it would be Christian and his young boy against Adam Copeland, and Daniel Garcia could be his new young boy.
There you go. See? Yeah. See? That's positive thinking.
Yeah, it's like the next generation.
Yes, there you go. And here's the thing. I think the match between Nick Wayne and Dan Garcia would be really good, because then you got younger wrestlers that basically want to make a name for themselves and showing them what each other can do. And, you know, Nick Wayne has, you know, Darby Allin has commented on how Nick Wayne wrestles and, you know, all the moves he does and everything. And we've seen what Nick Wayne can do. And this is why it kind of bothers me a little bit, is that you don't get to see much of Nick Wayne do much in this particular faction. So if you have him in a tag team, and we all know Christian doesn't like to work a lot.
No.
And basically has Nick do all the work against Adam and Daniel, you're going to see what Nick Wayne can really do. So maybe we got something down the road where you got a tag team. If they win the tag team, then I can see Adam saying, now I get my shot at you, Christian.
Yep, exactly. There you go. There you go. We've got it. We've nailed it. We've got the storyline down.
There we go. See? Why doesn't Tony hire us? Jesus.
I know. God,
I don't know.
Tony, I'll do it for cheap. Come on.
There you go. Now we got AEW Women's World Championship with Timeless Tony Storm, who's the champ with Miami and Luther, versus the empresaria, Deonna Purrazzo, who we found out through storylines, are friends, were wrestling together, and now they're not. And now we want to see who beats who. Do you think it's time for Miss Purrazzo to have a belt on her?
No, right? I love her. I absolutely love her. She's one of my favorites. but I don't think it's time to A, give her a belt yet in AEW. She's still quite new to the company. And B, I don't think it's time to take the title off Tony. Her popularity is sky high. Like, she won some award for like the best gimmick the other day.
Yep.
And I think, to me, she's my favorite gimmick in all the wrestling. Male, female, whatever, it doesn't matter to me. I just love Toni Storm. I could see some people not liking it, and that's fine too. That's fine. But I think the majority, it seems to be, people are very high on her. So I don't think take the title off her yet. Like, that would just, I don't know. Again, I always try and see the other side. So maybe you could use it as an excuse to make her even more crazy. But I think she's crazy enough.
Yeah, without a doubt. She's playing the character very well. I would kind of agree. I think there's no particular reason to take the belt off of Toni Storm.
No.
At least not yet. Yana has just recently come into the organization, and you've got other established female wrestlers that I think would be more of a better contender. Example, Ruby Soho.
See, that would be fantastic.
They're trying,
and it would make
to
sense.
Do that story. They're trying to do that storyline between Toni Storm and Ruby Soho, and I think that would be great to put a. You can put a belt on Ruby. That'd be fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or Thunder Rosa is roaring back.
That's true.
Have a match between Toni and Thunder Rosa. Well, you know what Thunder Rosa can do, and I think it'd be great.
Agree. And I think Deonna deserves a title at some point. I just think hasn't had any like standout matches yet, but which is fair enough because they've mostly been, you know, establishing her and things.
You know, I would rather see her wrestle someone like Akira Shida.
Oh, yeah.
Or Nyla Rose.
Mm.
Or here's one, Tyra Valkyrie.
Oh, that would be very good. Yes, yes, yes.
And get her feet wet and more established. And that way, you know, when the time is right, if Toni still has the belt, set it up again for that. But
absolutely. Like a rematch would be better.
For you being the new kid on the block to come in and say, I want to be the champion and not ruffle feathers, good luck with that.
I'm also intrigued, like, what's happening with the Mariah May storyline, because every week, basically, she asks Toni to watch a match, and Tony's like too busy, or it's some reason she can't watch a match.
So she lies about it.
I assume they're setting up at some point Mariah turns on it.
I mean, that would basically look the way the storyline is going to, though, whether or not that actually happens. And here's the thing. What do you do with Luther? Even though he's not doing much, what do you do with Luther?
I just like having him there. He just has to stand there and look like he does. I think it's great.
I mean, his facial expressions are just phenomenal. And then he's there to back up the catcher and all this. You know, I mean, that's great.
It's the best work he's done.
I mean, Mariah May, I see her fitting in more with Julia Hart.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Yeah, yeah. Because in Stardom, she was in a faction. I can't remember what the faction was now. Was it Julia's faction? I'm racking my brain. I'm forgetting. I'm a very forgetful person when it comes to this. I think she was in a faction in Japan for a bit. And,
so,
So,
but now is not the time to take the belt off it. Not right now.
No, absolutely not.
Oh,
I don't think so.
This match we're going to love. AEW World Championship. Samoa Joe versus Hangman Adam Page, who people have said they got him looking like Magnum TA, which I can't lie. So then we got him facing Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana.
Yay.
Yeah, and his little dance, yeah. I swear to God, they got to name that dance the Nana Shuffle, I guess.
Yeah, I'm into that. Because, I don't think it has a name, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, maybe the Swerve? I don't know.
Yeah, and then the wonderful backup dancer she had.
That was brilliant.
Is he going to make an appearance on the pay-per-view?
AEW usually go all out for pay-per-views, so possibly.
There you go.
Yeah.
I am perplexed by this match, though, only because You know, Swerve has shown me something and has come up in the rankings. So has Adam Page, but Samoa Joe has not done much of anything since he's gotten the belt.
No.
And I'm not sure if that is the kind of a buildup for him or if he's got some underlying injury or what, but I haven't seen him, you know, like officially come out and challenge someone and say, okay, you know, I'm going to challenge you for this. We're going to, you know, except with this match, and even with this match, you had him complaining that he's facing two guys. Well, if you got Tony saying they're both number one contenders because there wasn't a definite winner of their match, you know, if the boss says it, then the boss says it. So,
yeah. And here's the normally thing. The kind of wrestler who wouldn't mind. He'd be like, fine, bring it on.
Yeah. You know, Hangman has had the title before. Swerve, he's kind of like the enigma is if you put the title on Swerve, what would you see him doing or what direction would he go?
Guess he could continue his feud with Paige, but we've seen it.
Well, you know, we've seen the violent feuds and how the blood is spilled and everything, and you know.
Plus, I know I said this for Tony, but I'm going to say it again here. I think it's too early to take it off Joe. You're right; he hasn't done too much with it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they've got something in mind. You know, do something. Give him some. He's had some great matches. Don't get me wrong, but he hasn't had the match or the feud of his reign. You know.
Yeah, he hasn't had that definitive match that everyone expects. Here's the thing. Hangman and Swerve, I think, are going to cancel each other out because of their storyline hatred for each other. And Joe's going to pin the weaker of the two and retain the belt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you do after that is open to things that you got Tama, you got Okada coming in, you have Ospreay coming in. Do you want to basically keep the belt on Joe, which is a safe bet? And basically, when Okada and Ospreay come in, kind of work them up into the rankings to basically give that good opponent feel against Joe.
That'd for be a good. Although match. I would like to see Ospreay versus Strickland. That'd be good.
Ooh. You have now struck up my curiosity, my friend.
That's yes, the kind of matchups we want.
That there, see, there we go. I mean, if you want to go up in the rankings, that would be great. You know, because eventually, I think what would come down the road would either be a Samoa Joe versus Okada match or Samoa Joe versus Ospreay match, to basically have the belt change hands. And in order to do that, you want to legitimize both those individuals in the rankings. So to take the belt off Joe right now, it's not, as they would say, not good for business, especially when you got two well-known wrestling stars coming into your organization and they want to make a mark. And the only way to do that is go up in the rankings and challenge the champion. And if you challenge Samoa Joe, there you go.
Absolutely.
Yep. So now we come to the match that is going to be very emotional. Going to basically leave a lot of blood, sweat, and tears all over the place. And
I'm not ready.
neither Sal and I are ready, but officially, and this is official, this will be Sting's last wrestling match.
And I think we can trust AEW, Sting, unlike Ric Flair or someone like
that. Unlike Ric Flair and what's the name? Funk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Dory Funk. Yeah.
I think when Sting says it, he means it.
Yeah. So, and this is coming from Sting. Sting says this is his last wrestling match, period. He's not going to wrestle for any other organization. He's not going to wrestle anymore. And it's a tornado tag team match with Sting
and his apprentice, people are calling him Darby Allin. And supposedly, originally, it was supposed to be Ric Flair in the corner, but as we've seen through storylines, Ric Flair had a talk with Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, the Young Bucks, and I have a strange feeling that Mr. Flair may change allegiance and side with the Young Bucks.
Right, I've got another idea.
Go ahead, my friend.
Maybe I'm overthinking this, people, so maybe I'm wrong. Flair changes allegiance. He comes out with the Bucks, and you're like, oh, God, no. He's going to screw Sting over one last time. Maybe it's a ploy for Flair to catch them off guard for when they try and cheat. He can get one over. He can screw them over for Sting. It's all a trick. Now, I might be overthinking it. That might be overbooking, WCW style, you know?
No, that's not overthinking. Believe me, that's not overthinking.
Because it's putting someone in their camp, like, to watch them, you know?
Here's the other thing, too, is when we last left you with the Young Bucks coming in and basically kicking Sting and Darby Allin's asses, and they have blood on their wonderful white suits, which they said they can't get out. And
I love the way they keep wearing those.
Yeah, yeah. And two of Sting's sons come in, and they get trounced by Young Bucks, which hard to believe, looking at the size of Sting's boys. Maybe this is the comeuppance that Matthew Nicholas get is Rick looks like he's befriending them, but like you said, turns on them. But then Sting's sons kick Matthew and Nicholas Jackson's asses all over the place from each pillar to post.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would basically be a good send-off for Sting's last match, knowing that his family comes to his aid.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Kicks their ass, and everyone goes home happy.
I actually do think that you're onto something. I think they might do something unusual in wrestling, and he'll go out as the champion, as a winner. I think they're going to make the fans happy here. Because the Bucks winning, it would be nuclear heat. It absolutely would. But I think they're going to do something different, and they're going to be super respectful and be like, no, 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 let's let you retire as a champion. You're Sting. Anyone else? Okay. Most people retire, you know, looking at the lights. This is Sting.
Right.
It's not any wrestler, you know.
Right. You know, and to honor Sting's legacy in the wrestling industry is to let him keep the championship. Let him go out in a blaze of glory.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can always basically have them turn in the belts.
Yeah.
And have a tournament to determine who do you want to be the next tag team champions.
And we all know AEW love tournaments. So.
And the thing is, you have a lot of talent in your roster to form tag teams to do this. So it's not like you're hurting for talent. You've got the talent right there. What better way to showcase your talent by having a tournament to determine who's going to be the new tag team champions?
I think they're going to do it. I think that's what they're going to do against everyone. Everyone else is saying online, oh, well, of course he's going to lose. It's tradition. It's tradition. That's what I don't think that's going to happen.
Or the Power Mad Young Bucks do one thing that basically is going to set off the crowd and one thing only.
Mm.
Is because they're their boss, mind you, and the referee is there. They're going to have the referee because Ric Flair is going to basically somehow knock Darby Allin out. They're going to get Sting in a compromising position, and basically, you're going to have one of the Young Bucks tell the ref.
It would send people crazy.
I'll find you. And you count to three. Okay, Sting loses. They get the belts. The nuclear heat happens. But basically, after they win the belts, Sting's sons come in, kick him out,
and they give their dad the proper send-off that he deserves.
Could do that as well. Could do that as well. They're all good options. I don't think there's a bad option here, really. People just want to see Sting one last time. It doesn't really matter.
And the thing is, we all know Ric Flair is probably going to, in order to make this look viable, screw Sting somehow, some way, somewhere.
He's screwing someone over. That's the only reason you have Ric Flair there.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and Ric Flair wants to be a part of his retirement farewell match. And what better way to go up? Because, you know, they call you the dirtiest player in the game. So why not keep that title with you? You know,
that's why I think, though, the trick is going to be he's doing dirty on the books. He's tricking the books. That's what I'm sticking with. I could be totally wrong, but I'm sticking with it.
No,
he's gonna screw the
books
over.
No. You may have something. And here's the thing is Ric Flair is like the enigma, because after having that meeting, you have no idea which direction he's going to go.
Exactly. It's kind of like, and logic from past would say, of course he's going to screw over Sting. He hates Sting. But
yeah. You know, I mean, they've had these matches in the past where they knock each other loopy for God knows. But, you know, you want to basically have a good send-off for the Icon Sting for all the years he's put in into this industry.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that he goes out on a high note, regardless on whether he loses or wins. Knowing Tony, there'll be the big pyro, there'll be a big fanfare, it wouldn't surprise me if there would be wrestlers that Sting knows from other organizations that may come into the ring to basically send him off with his, you know, good farewell. We do know one person that will not be there, that wants to be there so bad, but can't, and that's Kevin Nash, because of his agreement that he's made with WWE.
I understand, I think he probably would be allowed, but he knows it would look bad.
And the thing is I don't think that Kevin wants to put Triple H in a position where, you know, it's going to ruffle feathers with Triple H being the new sheriff in town. And, you know, if you're going to let him do it, then that means I have to let other people do it. You know,
it's a shame because AEW let it happen the other way. You know, they had that video package.
Tony has no problem if you have friends in other wrestling organizations to, you know, to go to their matches, to go behind the scenes, to do this. He has no problem with this because he knows that you're coming back to work for me. It's not like you're going to be stolen away. Well, with WWE, they're afraid of, hey, you know, if you go over here, they may talk to you with business and make you a better offer.
And I think they probably would. AEW would say Nash.
Yeah, you know, do you want to be like a general manager? You know, kind of like, you know, Kevin's been vocal about it and he would love to be there, but unfortunately can't. Doesn't mean that other of Sting's friends won't be there. One name that pops up that may make an appearance would be Lex Luger.
I haven't thought about that.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Oh, DDP, I could see, because they've had him on the show before, haven't they, in the past?
Right. Another one that kind of comes in, I know that DDP is helping him right now, is Buff Bagwell.
Yeah.
Some of the people from Georgia Championship Wrestling or WCW that he's had, you know, great friendships with. I can see these people, you know, camera doing these shots at ringside. And then when the match is over, them all getting in the ring and hugging and high fives and whatever, because you want to have Sting go out in a fanfare. You want him to go out with all the pyro and confetti and everything that this man deserves. And Tony will pull out all the stops to make sure that he gets it. So, yeah, it's bittersweet because I have watched Sting from get-go. That was the first wrestling match I took my daughter to when I was in Milwaukee, and Sting was a part of it, and Sting won a championship. And that's when he was Surfer Sting with the blonde buzz cut.
Oh, whoa. Know, yeah, retro.
The tan and had shoulders and everything, you know, and all the recreations of Sting down the road has told me one thing, is that this man always finds a way to reinvent himself,
mm-hmm.
always finds a way to basically look at things differently and pass on, you know, advice to the younger talent, and have basically utilized them for their talent, and it's kind of like a equal pairing. And I think this thing with Darby Allin with him now is like people joke about Apprentice. I think what it is Sting is passing on the knowledge of the business to Darby Allin, who basically will take that and go leaps and bounds with it.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
In a way, it's kind of like passing the torch to the younger talent. And with everything and all the knowledge that Sting has gathered through the years of this industry, you know, it's not a waste if you can pass it on to the right person, and Darby's that right person. And, you know, their friendship is, you know, speaks volumes. And something just popped in my head that I don't even want to think about. But
oh, no.
What if Darby screws thing over?
Oh, whoa. Okay, I hadn't even considered that. I don't think he will, but now you've planted a seed of thought.
But if the bosses say to do it, or you'll get fired, what are you going to do?
I think, but most people, it would be a dilemma, that. But I don't know. Darby seems like the kind of person who'd go to the bosses, "Well, screw you. I don't care."
Can I, like, give you F you?
Yeah, I could imagine him doing that. That's his whole vibe, isn't it? But then, well, that might still happen, because isn't he planning to take some time off soon anyway to climb a mountain or something? So that could be what they do. They fire him, I mean, in storyline.
If you want to do something totally unexpected and flip the script, you know, Tony, you never know. With him and how Sting wants to do this, there's so many different directions, and
yeah,
you just want to make sure that no matter what direction you do it, that you make the man look good. And to do this with Darby, man, you're talking about leaving a lasting impression that when Darby wrestles, yeah, I'm the guy that screwed Sting. I'm the one that carried the team. I'm the one that did everything. He did nothing. He didn't teach me shit. I taught him. And Darby can be as this wonderful heel persona, gain generate heat.
Yeah.
Kind of like Dominic Mysterio. And then some. And then form the stable with the Young Bucks.
That would be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen. But now there is that is a possibility I'd never considered. So,
Or Darby aligns himself with Ric Flair, his nemesis.
See, that would also be shocking.
There is so many directions this can go, but no matter which direction it goes to, I send Sting off in the fanfare he deserves, and nothing more, nothing less. So I think the last
shots are going to be positive. You're going to be happy, I think.
You know, and if it goes over your pay-per-view time limit, damn it, let it go. Because this man deserves everything that, you know, you can give him for doing everything. This coming from a gentleman that, when he was in WWE, had this almost career-ending injury, come back from it, and then comes into your organization and works and basically has helped train the younger talent, have given them his insight on the business, how to conduct yourself, how to do what needs to be done for your character, how to basically adapt and roll with the punches, how basically, you know, you don't have to win all the time to get noticed, how to basically the ins and outs of this business, don't get caught in the pitfalls, you know, don't do completely what I did, because when I was younger, I kind of did some stuff that I shouldn't have, and I'll be the first one to admit, things of that nature. When you've got all this knowledge and a talent and all these things that you can pass on, that's a gift. That is really a gift. And for the younger talent to basically listen to this and with open ears and open mind, and to learn from mistakes from an icon like Sting or the Pitfalls, and take that under heart and basically run with it to another level, that speaks volumes. Because my God, that just you're basically telling that person that I get it, I'm gonna do this. Thank you for, believing in me. Thank you for, spending some time with me to assist me in what I have to do to order to get that next plateau. And if it wasn't for my interaction with you or the time I spent with you, I wouldn't have known this. I wouldn't have thought of this. I would have done something different.
Well, and it's an interesting pairing as well because of all that stuff.
I
They're very
mean,
different wrestlers, so it's intriguing to see like
yeah.
what is Darby gonna take from Sting and add to, what he does.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, Sting's always gonna be in our minds and hearts. He's just because he's not wrestling, it doesn't mean that he's gonna be out of the limelight. Like, I can guarantee you, he'll still have his connections in professional wrestling, sports entertainment, no
Oh, yeah.
matter what organization it is.
I'm sure he'll still probably appear on AEW TV in some capacity,
You can make Sting the goodwill ambassador of sports entertainment.
Yeah, there you go.
And he can go and make appearances, whether it's different sporting events or, conventions or whatever.
Which I think he is going to
I
do
think,
because they've been very careful with the language, if you notice. They always say it's his last wrestling match. They're not
yes,
saying he's
and
retiring.
well, here's well, he is retiring in a business sense, but he's not retiring as a person. And if I'm not mistaken, the one convention Blake and I are going to, I believe Sting is making an appearance.
There you go. There you go. See, he's
And
still going to be doing stuff.
we've already have decided that, yeah, we want to get Sting's autograph and photo, and then kind of like show Sal, like, look at this. We don't have the action figure, but we got the 5x7 glossy. And we got to shake hands with the real thing.
Devastated.
There you go.
I'd be
So
crushed
hey,
if my friends showed me that. I'd be like, no, how dare you?
see, and then I can say, so Sting does like me better, just like Jay Lethal likes me better. And on that note, that is the whole card, top to bottom. And I said, I'm sure it's going to be culminated with a very emotional situation with Sting's last match. And let's see if Tony comes out. I would love to see Tony come out and and give the man a hug, give the man a send
Oh,
off,
I
and
think he will. Yeah.
don't just sit behind the desk and the mic. Give him show him your attention and gratitude for everything he's done for your organization. So
Definitely. Yeah, because he has done a lot. Just that having him there elevated them, to another level.
oh yeah, you basically kind of like, for lack of a sense, kind of gave your organization, legitimize it by having him there and interacting with the talent and doing this with different storylines. And I'm sure that Sting has some input on the storylines that he went through, because otherwise he wouldn't be doing some of the things he's doing, especially his age, where he's going through tables and climbing up ladders and
It's
going underneath
crazy.
rings and whatever.
I never expected any of that.
God bless him for, he's not that much older than I am. God bless him for able to do that, what he's doing. And he's got his family, and you want to spend time with family. That's not a bad thing, especially if you can spend time with your family, just walking into the sunset. That's great, and that'd be a great send off for him. And God bless. All I want is the best for this man, for everything he's done for everybody else. So,
Absolutely. One of the all-time greats. We love you, Sting.
yep, we do sing. And you're not going to be missed. You're not going to be forgotten. If you think that people are going to do it, I guarantee you. I mean, everyone says, "Ooh, Ric Flair," how many people go?
And also, of course, we are going to be sadly missing out on It's Sting.
Tony, I guarantee you, Tony's going to be there and give him the biggest hug, and there's going to be some waterworks, and why not, you know? And I can see this. I guarantee they're going to have Tony on play-by-play, and all of a sudden I can hear somebody going, "Okay, Tony, and?" And you got Tony going, "It's Sting." Yeah, God.
I'll miss it.
We all will. So for more information on our show, including where you can find us on social media or watch the show on YouTube, go to theblakeandsalshow.com. And don't forget to leave a comment and a reading and review, and we'll read it on the show. And please, hey, send words of encouragement to Blake. Every little thing helps. Every little thing was taken to heart. We just want Blake to fight hard, get better, and be back with the best of spirits. And if you give him words of encouragement, I guarantee you, knowing Blake like I do and part of the family, he will be so grateful for it, as well as my family being grateful for it. So any type of words of encouragement, even if you basically tell him to say, "Fight, Blake, fight," I guarantee you that is going to pick up his spirits, liven his spirits, and give him that wonderful determination and mindset to do that, because he is starting right now. And, you know, small steps can lead into big things. And the more positive influence and thoughts, the better the prognosis will be. So,
absolutely.
And now that I've said that, and, you know, I know sometimes that you got the saddle that has a sound bite, said, "Fuck the kids, fuck Cody Rhodes." No, fuck cancer.
Yes.
So, there you go, Sal. Screw you.
Screw you, Sal, and fuck
there
cancer.
There you go. So, hey, and if you come back next week, Sal, you give me what for. That's okay. I take full responsibility. I take what John says. That's on me. So basically, if you want to come back, be the bad guy. Be the bad guy to me. I can take it. I got broad shoulders. I got big arms. And I can kick your ass.
Oh, the match is on. No, it's signed.
I can't kick your ass. Your fiance will get upset with me. Never mind. Just, we'll be back for our next show with all of us. And hey, John. Your plugs, my sir. Plug your product.
Yeah, if you want to hear more of me, if you haven't had enough today, because it's been quite a lot, you can find me. I've got shows Bat Minute, Miami Minute, Hedvig, Inch by Angry Inch, all podcasts. You just look them up. I'm not going to tell you what they're about. I'm on here enough. And yeah, just find me on all the social medias, either under John Parker or my stage character, Cantina Turner. You can look up either name. I think both work.
You're just such a quiet celebrity.
Oh, I wish.
You're modest.
Me?
Yes. Under the dictionary is a picture of you, and the word modest is right there. So, hey, just to let you know that next week will be a special archive show, and then the week after that, all three of us will be back together. To talk about the road to WrestleMania. Two nights coming in April, my friend. Two nights, count them. One, two. Just when you think you get tired of one, now we got a second one that comes right back at you. So be here for that. And as always, it's been your pleasure. And if you happen to have a local independent wrestling organization where you live or preside in, please patronize these people, the business. These are the young men and women coming up in the world of sports entertainment, professional wrestling. They want to show you the entire package, what they can do. Their moves, their persona, their gimmick, their promos, the whole kit and caboodle to get that brass ring to a major wrestling organization. But they can't do it if you're not there watching them. And believe me, doesn't matter if it's 10 people, if it's 20 people, if it's 120 people, they appreciate you coming and paying attention to what they can do to get to that next step. But hey, let's all do it responsibly, act like adults. We got one world. Let's treat each other with love and kindness to make that world a better place, okay? Because right now, sometimes it's a scary place. We just want to make it better and safe. So if you go to, when you go to these matches, please make it a safe environment for all to enjoy. And that note, John, my friend, hey, this has been great. I love it. You know what? Bosh should leave us in charge again someday.
It's our show now. We've taken over. The other two, take
all right. All right. Well, then, if the other two want to come in, maybe we'll let them join. Maybe we won't. And we'll have to see who's in, who's not. But yep. You know, my friend, you're always welcome here. This is a safe haven for you. This is a wonderful place for you. And you know what? You're a wonderful person and you deserve nothing less.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. And I... kudos to you taking the time out to do this. And once again, we love you guys. And whatever you do in life, make the best of it and do it with...
Hey. We'll go with that then, yeah?
We'll go with that, my friend.
Stop the recording.
Thank you so very much. Goodbye, mwah, and good night.
Bye-bye, bitch.